And counsel for our next case can come up and settle in at counsel table. Please take your time and get comfortable in whatever way makes you, puts you in a good position to proceed with the arguments today. I'll make just a few quick remarks as you're settling in, and it's nothing too earth-shattering, so you can feel free to keep moving while I'm doing it. So this is the third matter on our oral argument calendar. We have a total of six. Four of those are oral. So before I have the marshal call the third case, I just want to make note of a few things for counsel in case you didn't previously know them. The panel that is constituted for today's case is, as you've been notified, and it does include Judge Klopaki, who, as you can see, is not at the bench, but he is with us remotely. And so what we have the advantage of is some technology that allows Judge Klopaki to remain safely where he is and not on the icy roads. But we have a meeting owl that's positioned right in front of the podium, and that will provide Judge Klopaki with a visual of the courtroom so he can see you and see your argument. He can also, of course, hear you, and he can respond and ask questions. So this should proceed as it would any other instance. It'll sound mostly like a telephone argument from your point of view, but for us, it allows us a really complete experience, and so we very much appreciate having you here today. So having given you that information, I want to let the marshal call the case.
Now calling case number A22-0702, Samaj Abier Akwangu, petitioner, appellant, versus State of Minnesota, respondent.
All right, and I see counsel are seated at the table, and you're well aware, I think, of our procedures here. We ask you to argue the case, if you would, from the center podium for audio reasons. This argument is recorded. It will later have the audio recording available on the website. And if you would start your remarks at the very beginning by identifying yourself as well as the client you represent, we'd appreciate that as well. And then keep an eye on the clock. That's also on the center podium. It tends to go quickly, but we look forward to the conversation with you. So, counsel for appellant, you can begin when you're ready.
Thank you, Your Honor. With due respect, my name is Patrick Siwaneri. I represent the petitioner / appellant, Samaj Abier Akwangu.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Your Honors, the summary of the issues, or the sole issue before this court, is whether a district court is authorized to impose terms and conditions applicable to a 10-year conditional release term to a sentence of 10-year supervised probation term. What is apparent from the briefing and the district court hearing is there is nothing in dispute as to whether the terms of Akwangu's 10-year supervised release term are the same with the terms applicable to a 10-year conditional release term. But what the district court judge said is, well, I have the authority to impose probation. And the state also does not disagree that what was imposed on Akwangu is the same or even harsher than the conditions that go with a 10-year conditional release term. The closest the state got to that was on page 7 of their brief, footnote number 2, where they say that, well, apparently there is no legal guidance on that so far. Your Honor, the other thing I want to point out is, excuse me, this apparently may have, you know, caught the attention of state authorities, because in the Minnesota sentencing guidelines, I think in about 2020, January 2020, did vote to say that judges should not impose more than 5-year term of probation. But if they want to do that, they may have to empanel a 12-man jury. So what Akwangu is precisely saying in these cases, I am not a candidate for 10-year conditional probation term. But what was loaded on me during sentencing are the terms and conditions of a 10-year conditional release term without the court pronouncing that he's being sentenced to a 10-year conditional release term. So the transcript clearly showed that the judge said, I sentence you to 10-year supervised release term. But the ingredients, the elements, the conditions that were applied under that 10-year supervised release term are just the same or even harsher than the ones that go with a 10-year conditional release term. And the state has said, well, if it was not mentioned that he's been sentenced to 10-year conditional release term, then he's out of luck. So impliedly, the district court can go anywhere or is at liberty to impose any level of sentence on Okongwu. Okongwu respectfully says that, no, this is not true, because the statutes provided conditions for you to impose on me or any other defendant that falls within the parameters of 10-year conditional release term. That's one, there must be a finding by a jury, or two, the defendant himself may have voluntarily admitted that he's subject to risk level, or he's a risk level 3 offender, as was in the case of Reynolds, which the Supreme Court clearly also laid down in great detail these principles. And it's very interesting to know that Reynolds was decided by Mr. Supreme Court in 2016, and it also cited Blakely versus Washington. But Okongwu was sentenced in 2017. So both the county attorney and the district court have available to them, or at least the law was available before Okongwu was sentenced. And up till now, both during the argument at the district court level and even in the briefing, there has been no authority to support the imposition of conditions that go with a 10-year conditional release term on an offender who was sentenced to a 10-year supervised release term. So this is exactly where we are. And with due respect, is our position that relying on on Mr. Supreme Court case of Reynolds v. State, the sentence on Okongwu is not authorized by law. Because since the merits or ingredients of the offense that was loaded of Okongwu's sentence require any of those two conditions to have been met before the court goes to impose those conditions that go with 10-year conditional release term, since they were not met in this case, i.e., there is no jury that found Okongwu guilty in that respect, or Okongwu did not concede or admit that he was a risk level 3 offender, then the sentence is not authorized by law.
So if I could take a step back, Mr. Nwaneri, the state argues that the issue you're raising here about the legality of your client's, you know, 10 years of supervised probation is in conditions is different than the one you raised with the district court, which focused on should you vacate a conditional release term that they believe wasn't imposed. They're saying you're making a different legal argument below than you are here. Could you address that for us? What did you present this argument to the district court in the way you're presenting it to us here?
Yes, Your Honor, we did. What happened in district court was when we filed our motion, our moving motion, initial motion and original memorandum, the state responded to say that, well, you are saying that we sentenced Okongwu to 10-year conditional release term. No, that is not the case, because to sentence him to that, Okong would have been, first of all, be sentenced to the Commissioner of Corrections before these conditions can, you know, come into play. But he was not sentenced to the Commissioner of Corrections, so that, let's say, the captioning of our motion, according to the state, will not apply. Then, if you look at our reply brief, our reply memorandum in the district court, we simply told the state, we concede that ordinarily for an offender to have a court impose on him or her 10-year conditional release term, the person would have first of all been committed to the Commissioner of Corrections, and subsequently, you know, then upon release, these conditions will apply to him. We concede that, but apart from that, what is at play here is more or less semantics, that Okongwu did not pass through Commissioner of Corrections, but right from sentencing, you loaded on him the conditions that go with a 10-year conditional release term. So it was argued at the district court.
It was argued, and you stated that in your reply brief.
Yes, my reply brief. And then during oral argument, because the district court also did hold oral argument, apart from when briefing was, we are closed, the issues were, you know, we went back and forth, both parties, and the court clearly saw where the argument was, and what the judge said, and I think he wrote a short memorandum in support of his position, is that, well, I'm authorized to impose terms of probation, and that was it. And we are not saying that the district court judge does not have the power to impose terms of correction, probation. That's not Okongwu's argument. Okongwu's argument is that the district court went far and above and beyond what he was authorized to do without prior finding by a jury or admission by him, and go into the zone of imposition of sentence that he can only do when, one, there is a jury finding, prior jury finding of guilt, or he admitted that is a risk level 3 offender. So it was clearly argued and discussed at the district court. Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honor, that would be the brief summary of, you know, our argument this morning. I don't know whether the court has any questions. I know that I still have about 4 or 5 minutes.
And
to
you.
Go.
Let me just weigh in here for a minute.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Stood convicted of a felony, number 1, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
And upon being convicted, he was granted probationary status. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
By reason of a stay of imposition of sentence?
Yes, Your Honor.
And then, as typical with the stay of sentence and probation, is there were certain conditions attached to that probation. Are you saying that any one of those conditions violated state statute in terms of what could be a condition for a state of imposition of sentence?
Yes, it did violate, because...
What statute was violated?
There were two of them, 609.3455. And
what did it say? Why is that a violation?
Your Honor, they are quite lengthy. 609.3455 and 244.05. If you look at pages 4 to 6 of our opening brief, we enumerated about almost 23 conditions that were imposed on Okong, and they were.
I understand your argument. That you're
Yes, sir.
That's not my question. My question is, what about the trial judge's conditions for the probation violated state statute. Specifically, is there any state statute that says you cannot impose this kind of condition that the trial judge imposed?
You know, the state statute did not put it that way. Rather, what is
the question? The question is really, is there such a statute?
I didn't quite hear the last thing you said, Your Honor.
Is there such a statute that prohibits the trial judge from imposing conditions of probation similar to what were imposed here?
Well, if I follow the way you phrased it, what it will be is state statute telling the trial court judge that for you to impose these kind of conditions, then this person would have met this criteria.
Your argument is that these may be excessive, and they maybe shouldn't have been imposed on a probation violation. But is there anything in the statutory framework which says what you can do on in imposing conditions on probation that makes anything that was done here unlawful? And if so, I'd like to know specifically what it was.
There's no state statute saying a district court judge cannot impose these conditions. There is none, to the best of my knowledge. But what the state statute says is these conditions enumerated under 609.3455 and 244.05, for you to go that far as a district court judge, then you will have to have a jury finding of guilt, or defendants would have admitted.
All right.
Yes. So,
are you saying that the conditions here were such that somehow the sentence was fundamentally unfair?
It was fundamentally excessive, fundamentally unfair, and does not, you know, meet the requirements of the law, pursuant to the decision of the Supreme Court in Reynolds versus State. It does not. So it's fundamentally unfair, fundamentally excessive, and then is not being authorized by law. Because the state statute is clear that if you have to impose these conditions, the person would have come under these categories. So we have 10-year, which is the same, and also, Your Honor, the 10 years under those statutes are mandatory. They are mandatory. The court doesn't even have a discretion to give those 10 years. But the court gave Okongwu 10 years and loaded on him the conditions that go with, that come under these statutes, or somebody who has been, first of all, passed, you know, be convicted or committed to the custody of the Commissioner for Corrections. All those things were loaded up on Okongwu without calling them, or without the court saying, I'm sentencing you to 10-year conditional release term. The court said, I'm sentencing you to 10-year supervised probation. And the danger of allowing this type of things to happen is it will create an avenue where decisions of the Supreme Court will be circumvented based on semantics. My time is up.
Thank you, Mr. Nwaniri.
Thank you.
Of course, you do have 5 minutes for rebuttal if you choose.
Thank you.
Okay.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Jessica Beerworth. I am representing the respondent in this matter, the Dakota County Attorney's Office. First and foremost, I do want to clarify, counsel indicated that the state agreed or did not disagree that the conditions imposed were more harsh. Nowhere in the state's brief or at any point in time in the record does the state indicate that they thought these conditions were anything other than very standard probationary conditions associated with a conviction for criminal sexual conduct. So I want to set that correct. Secondly, Your Honors, to answer Judge Klopaki's question, specifically, not only is there not a statute prohibiting this, there is a statute permitting this. And that is cited in the state's brief, and that is the intermediate sanctions. The sentence is permitted by 609.135, and the intermediate sanctions that the district court can in fact impose is defined or outlined in 609.135 subdivision 1B. I want to set...
Do you see anything in the conditions imposed here that are outside that list?
Specifically, no, Your Honor. The conditions of release... The other piece I want to touch on, Your Honors, is the use of the term supervised probation, supervised release, and conditional release. Three very different items here. Supervised probation is what the district court can impose, and that is what is permitted by statute. Supervised release and conditional release are typically imposed as a commit to the, actually only imposed as a commit to the Commissioner of Corrections. That is, counsel's motion in the district court was captioned, motion to vacate conditions of release, taking issue with a conditional release term that was not imposed, and taking issue with the district court assigning the appellant a level 3 designation as a sex offender. Both of those things the district court didn't do. The district court made the very clear record of that and said, I have no authority to make your client a level 3 sex offender. That happens well after is as part of the DOC process. And the so with those three differences established, I also want to distinguish Reynolds, which the appellant has relied on. Reynolds addresses a very specific type of case, a very small type of case, and that is a failure to register case. That is of 243 is the statute that applies to that. That requires that in the event that a person is convicted of failure to register, whether or not the prison piece applies, but they're, it does apply because the question that has to be answered or found is whether or not they've been designated a level 3 sex offender, and then the court must impose conditions of release. None of that applies here. The defendant has not been to prison. He has not been, the appellant, he has not been designated a level 3 sex offender, and there has not been a conditional release term imposed on him in any way, shape, or form. So, Your Honors, with that, I would, at this point, entertain any questions that the court has and answer those to the best of my ability. Absent those questions, Your Honors, I would rely on my brief and be seated.
Any questions?
I have one question. It appears that the Sentencing Guidelines Commission is now recommending fairly recently that probation should not exceed 5 years. This one was a 10-year probation. Is that a problem area at all?
I don't believe it is, Your Honor. I specifically did look that up, and it does. It, though I did not cite it in my brief, I didn't have the luxury of a reply. The fact of the matter is I believe the sentencing guidelines in the section entitled length of stay, which is found somewhere in the neighborhood of page 72 of those guidelines, does distinguish this type of case, this criminal sexual conduct case, and does allow a court to stay that sentence for a longer period.
So the guidelines' own terms of 5 years is not applicable to this conviction?
I believe given the comments or given the section of that of the guidelines, Your Honor, no.
Anything further from the panel? All right, very good. Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honors.
May it please the court once again, this is Mr. Wanneri. Let me respond briefly to what my learned friend has said. She started by saying that Ms. Bienworth, I hope I pronounced it properly. I don't want to damage your last name. Thank you. She started by saying that it's very standard probationary conditions associated with convictions for criminal sexual conduct. But the state does not cite the statute that says anybody convicted of criminal sexual conduct offense, we have all these terms of probation imposed on him or her. They don't say it. It's possible that it's the practice in their county. But unfortunately, it is wrong, clearly wrong. And they have been doing it for a long time. But it is wrong because the state, what the Minnesota statute say is, it's kind of you know, graded. Because you have all levels of CSC convictions. First-time offender, second-time offender. Then people that go to the level of being committed to serve time in prison. And you see the statute, even the sentencing guidelines going until when it comes to when somebody convicted of CSC is sentenced to the custody of the Commissioner of Corrections. Then upon his release, these mandatory conditions will apply. 10-year conditional release term. And then with these other conditions. But what the county, I think that should be Dakota County now, apparently, from what Ms. Benoit has said, is this is our practice. But that practice, with due respect, is wrong. They are not following the statute, and they have not cited one single statute that says any level of CSC conviction. This is what the terms of probation will be, or the length of probation will be. The state also tried to distinguish the case of Reynolds. And their position doesn't even help them. Because in Reynolds actually satisfied the conditions for imposition of 10-year conditional release term. Because he was convicted of CSC offense. He was sentenced to the custody of the Commissioner of Corrections. And upon his release, then these conditions that are in these two statutes were triggered. But Reynolds came to court and said, even though I was convicted of CSC, even though I was, the court asked, this court sentenced me to serve time in prison. But there is no, at the district court level, there is no finding by a jury of this level of guilt, and there is no admission by me either that I'm a risk level 3 offender. And the district court agreed with Reynolds. So even where somebody satisfied these conditions for imposition of 10-year conditional release term, the Supreme Court is firm that the other two conditions must also apply. So it doesn't end with, do you plead guilty to CSC? Yes, I do plead guilty. And then this person is a fair game. No. The court is saying it has to go beyond that. There has to be, one, either a finding of guilt by jury or admission of guilt by the defendant.
I don't mean to offend you, but it seems to me that you are conflating and confusing the concept of conditional release after a commitment to the Commissioner of Corrections with what we have here, which was a stay of imposition of sentence and a probationary term.
No, Your Honor, we are not confusing it. We agree that these are two separate things, but what we are saying is the sentence on Okong does not make the distinction. It doesn't make the distinction. And that is what we've been saying all along. That what the state is saying is maybe is merely semantics. We can give you anything, even though we need to satisfy certain conditions. But so long as we characterize it as supervised release term, is good. And we are saying that, no, this is not what the law is, Your Honor.
So, counsel, it looks like your time for rebuttal has concluded. I hope you've concluded your remarks. Do I have that correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks to
both lawyers in this case for the materials you provided, as well as the arguments. They're very helpful to the court. The matter is now submitted to this court for a decision. We will issue a decision within the statutory time frame. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you.